Petition number 9410, Reel 1.
Mr. Shale, Reel 1. Where do you come from, Mr. Shale?
I come from Coventry.
Which year were you born?
1921.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a master baker.
Self-employed?
No, he was employed.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
To do what?
I was a butcher's boy, first of all, and I had various jobs until I was 16. Then I applied to join the Marines. And just before I was 17, 24 days, I enlisted in the Marines at Birmingham.
Why did you decide to join the Marines?
Well, in those days, we had a large family. There was five sisters and four brothers. And we were poor, and another one out of the house was becoming an earner, and I was able to send my mother 2 shillings a week.
But why did you choose the Marines rather than another branch of the services?
Well, I don't know. I did originally go for the Navy, and then I looked at the Marines and I thought, well, there was a good setup, so I went for the Marines instead.
Did you think it would be better financially?
No, my intention in the first instance was to stay in as long as I could so I could get a pension and have a little bit of security out of life. But until then, I had absolutely nothing.
So what were the terms on which you signed on?
I signed up initially for 12 years, and then having completed the 12 years, I then signed up to complete the 21 years, and then having completed the 21 years, I then signed on for another 5 years. Having completed that 5 years, I then signed on for another 5 years, but unfortunately the Labour government had just cut the forces commitment, and although I as down as being accepted, I got axed because of the cuts, so I didn't get my last fifth five, which we call in the Navy.
How long did you have to be in the Marines until you got a pension?
21 years.
What did you think to the training that you had?
Oh, it was hard. It was hard. We went in those days, and you went inside the barracks, and you never came out. You never came out that barrack gate until 1 year later, until they considered you to be a fully fledged Marine, having done all your training. The only time we got off was on a Sunday afternoon after the church parade. It was hard, it was good. We slept on straw beds, we were well fed. You know, we'd eat anything in those days because we used to start early in the morning and finish late at night. And when we went to bed, we slept because we worked hard, we played hard.
But did you and the other boys think it was good at the time, or did you resent it?
Oh no, I thought it was good all the time. There was sport. I was interested in running. I became Marine Mile Champion in 1938. I used to do cross-country running. And it was a good open-air life. It was good. You had to take the good things with the bad. If they said jump, you jumped. Don't matter how high it was.
What were the bad things?
Oh, if you'd done something wrong, you'd be in the gymnasium and you'd be at the top of the wall bars, and there was 8 or 9 feet high, and they just left you hanging there. And when you dropped, and they threw a cup of cold water over you, and you got up, and because they said, get up. You'd done everything automatically. It was all to do with discipline.
Did that happen to you, hanging from the wall bars?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
For what?
Oh, for sniggering or laughing at the instructor. You know, things were hard, but it was all to do with discipline. And you, to be a good Marine, you had to have good discipline. And that was the basis of your training, to have the discipline that they required.
Now, when the war was declared by Chamberlain in September 1939, how did you react to that? Were you dismayed or pleased or what?
Well, at the time, I was in, I was on my way to the Ajax then. I was in Bermuda. We joined the Ajax at Bermuda.
Can you remember how you reacted to the war announcement?
No, because this was... I joined the Ajax before war was declared, and we had what they call a South American cruise part two. And we'd been all round South America, and just before war was declared, about 2 weeks before war was declared, we was laying alongside the wall at Rio de Janeiro on a courtesy call, and that was cut short, and we left for sea.
Cut short because of the war?
Because of the war, yes. That was about a fortnight before war was declared. So when on the day war was declared, I mean, we'd been to sea for a fortnight. The ship had been stripped of all its peacetime trappings and stowed away, and the ship was ready for action. And at that time, you know, I was one of the youngest Marines on board. And because of my discipline, I had faith in everything and everybody on the ship.
So you weren't apprehensive about how the Navy would do against the German Navy?
No, we had a wonderful ship.
Why was it so wonderful?
Well, there was a team spirit on there. There was a spirit of comradeship. I mean, if you go away on a ship for 2.5 years, everybody's your friend. You don't fall out. You're kiss and kin. You're all as one. You know, life is magic for you. You go out and you go to different places.
What kind of a ship was she to live on? Was she a comfortable ship?
Yes, comfortable, yes. The food was good.
Clean?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, we kept it clean. That was all we done. We cleaned the ship and we painted the ship. We done everything to the ship. We was on courtesy call, so the ship had to be clean. I mean, people were coming on board, visiting all the time at the various places we went to.
What were the normal duties of a Marine on board the ship?
Well, they were various. There were keyboard sentries.
Which sentries?
Keyboard sentries.
What's that?
You looked after all the vital keys on the ship, and that was a 24-hour-a-day job. You had a corporal of the gangway, and there were the cleaning duties. There were the turret crews, the gun crews, and you all had your own individual jobs to do. If you was a gun crew, well, you had something to do related to the guns. If you was a keyboard sentry, well, you was a keyboard sentry for a set period, then you got changed. You never got inundated with one job all the time.
What was the duty on the gangway?
A corporal of the gangway. Well, that was mainly when you was in harbour, and the gangway was manned 24 hours a day with a quartermaster.
To control who came
in? To control the people coming in and off. Yes, that's right, to see if they had permission to make certain the people coming off weren't drunk. There was an officer of the watch there as well, so there was three of you there manning the gangway. That was the only entrance on and off the ship.
Would it be true to say that the Marines were like a police force on the ship?
They were, in a way. Initially, they were on there to keep the peace with the sailors in case there was any mutiny or anything like that. But, of course, nothing like that never happened. But they were of course, used for landing parties or to quell any riots or anything like that that we had. You know, like when we was in Jamaica, they had riots, and we were landed there to quell the riots.
When was this?
Oh, during our tour. I can't remember. It was before the war. Before the war.
Can you remember what happened? Can you describe it? What you did?
No, we just went with our rifles. We just went with our rifles, and it would be a gathering of hostile people, and it normally took place in some area where the officer in charge would just say, the man in the red shirt, and five of you would fire. The man in the red shirt would be killed, and the riot would then end, and we just went back to the ship again.
Did that actually happen, or are you just giving that as an instance?
No, that did happen once. That did happen once.
How far away were these hostile crowds from you?
Normally about 50 yards away. They always kept their distance. But if the riot persisted, you know, somebody got shot, maybe in the leg or on the arm, but then, you know, the riot was over. Once one round had been fired, in anger, that was enough.
Were they throwing stones, or...?
Oh, yes, yes. Throwing stones and burning, looting. I mean, that's the reason we were called out, because the locals had lost control, you see.
Were they throwing stones at you?
Oh, yes, yes. Throwing stones at anybody that impeded their path, you know, or tried to stop them what they were doing.
Were any of the Marines hit?
No.
Did you have protective gear, like helmets and shields?
We only had a helmet, that was all. A steel helmet and your small arms rifle. That was all we had.
Truncheons?
In those days. No. No. Nothing like that. The rifle was the only friend you had.
What were they rioting about?
I can't really remember what they were writing about, but I know we were called out just the once.
Were you told at the time why they were writing?
Oh no, you was just told there was a riot, and you were there, and off you went. You done the business and come back. You done it instinctively.
Did it seem to be a political thing or just criminal? Did they have placards or anything of that kind?
No, they didn't have placards. No, they were just rioting. There was just a mass of people rioting and looting.
Just robbing shops?
Yes, yes.
What type of things were they stealing?
Well, we didn't know. We was in front. We was well in front of the mob, you know, and the riot was in front of us, and we couldn't see what was going. And the locals wanted them moved, and they couldn't move them.
This was the local police, was it?
Yeah. Mm.
Did you have any contact with the local police?
No. No. You just went as a number and you was told what to do and you did it and come away. And you had no feelings or sentiments about it at all. That was your job. You was a Royal Marine employed to keep law and order. And that's exactly what you did.
How many were in your party?
About 20, 25.
And how many?
Half the detachment, say. There was about 60 Marines on board the Ajax altogether.
How many shots did your party fire?
Only one. And the riot was over. One shot fired in anger and they just dispersed and there was peace and tranquility and there was no more trouble.
What happened to the chap who was shot?
Well, he was just dragged away. He was wounded. I don't think he was mortally wounded. I think he was just shot in the leg.
He was dragged away by the
people
in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Were you frightened?
No. Because I'd had a year's training.
So that was the only one occasion you were called out for riot duty, was it?
Oh, that was the only one occasion, yeah. That's one of the duties of a Royal Marine is to land for riots or skirmishes like that, you know.
That was in Kingston, was it?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Was it very far from the ship?
No, just a few miles.
Did you march there or taken in?
No, we went by van.
Now, coming back to the ship,
yeah.
Can we go on to the Battle of the River Plate?
Yeah.
And can you tell me in detail what you recollect of the battle and the period leading up to it?
Yeah. Well, it was about a fortnight before, and we'd sailed for sea. About a fortnight before war was declared, we left Rio de Janeiro. And as soon as we got clear of the harbour, everybody started doing extra training. The ship had all been got ready for action stations. And in them days, you know, there was great rivalry between the sailors and the Marines as to who was the fastest 6-inch guns crew on the ship. And if you were the fastest and the best, you could hold your head up high. And I was on the right gun of X turret. And we weren't the fastest. So it was during this period that I decided, with Corporal Bashford, whose position, we were both loaders, incidentally, on the 6-inch guns, and I was on the right-hand gun. And we stood together, and in between us we had this long rammer. Now our job was to load the shells in as fast as we could. Then the cordite followed it, the breech was closed and we fired. And the competition between the Navy and the Marines was for 10 rounds rapid fire. So speed was of the essence. And Corporal Bashford and myself amicably changed places. I moved from the left to the right and he took my place. Well, now that was much better for me because I was the strongest of the two and it meant our times got quicker and quicker and quicker and our pride was soon restored. After a week, we became the fastest guns crew on the Ajax. But the tragic thing is, it wasn't until later on that I realised that move had saved my life. And the days went by, and eventually war was declared. And on the day war was declared, we made contact with our first enemy ship, and it was a German ship called the Karl Fritzen. And we took the crew on board Ajax, and we sank her there and then as she stood.
She was a merchant ship, was she?
She was a merchant ship. We was in shipping lanes. And the second day, we got another ship called the Usukumu. And we did exactly the same thing to her. And they were all Germans, and we took them aboard the ship, and they became our prisoners of war.
The whole crew?
The whole crew, yes. We had them, and we had to look after them and feed them all the time they were on board.
Didn't it make the ship very crowded?
No, because we had places for it where there was plenty, room for them. And they were fed and they had cigarettes and they seemed quite happy, although they were prisoners.
Did you have much contact with the German prisoners?
Well, yes, you used to see them, you used to talk to them, you got to know them. And they used to say good morning to them, and they were quite all right. They were well looked after, they were fed, you know.
Was there any hostility between the British and the
Germans? No. They knew the war was over for them. They'd been caught and that was it. They didn't hold anything against us, you know. They knew we had a job to do. They'd been caught and I suppose they just accepted it.
Did they seem pleased or not to be caught?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you only spoke to them casually. You know, you didn't know their inner feelings. They probably were not happy about it at all, but they didn't show it outwardly.
Did you like them or not?
I had no axe to grind with them. They were just the same as me doing a job.
Now, you were going on to talk about how the Ajax was joined by two other ships.
Yeah, the Ajax was joined by the Achilles and HMS Exeter, an 8-inch cruiser. And they formed the 8th Cruiser Squadron. And that's what we was known as during our tour out there on the South American station. Captain Woodhouse was in charge of the squadron. And it was just after this that he informed the crew one evening that they were taking a calculated course and that would bring us in contact. This was on the 12th of December. That would bring us in contact with the battleship Graf Spee during the early hours of the 13th of December. Now, the sea's a big place and you wonder how they worked it out, but they did work it out right, because just after 6:15 a.m. on the 13th of December, action stations were sounded and we knew that something was afoot. Now, all they could see was a bit of smoke on the horizon. Now, action stations were sounded, and I was dressed in a pair of shorts and gym shoes. And I started running to my gun position. And as I reached the top of the ladder leading to the 2X turret, there was a massive explosion of 16-inch shells just 50 yards astern of the Ajax. Within seconds, I was at the rear door of X turret and inside. Quickly we were loading and firing our 6-inch guns. We were now in line ahead and the Exeter was in the rear because she was the biggest ship. During the course of action, Ajax was asked to investigate. This is the early, because all we saw at the moment was shells landing and the smoke on the horizon. Exeter was sent to investigate, being the rear and the bigger ship. And as she broke off on a different course, She was seen to be hit repeatedly by 16-inch shells. But all three ships carried on firing, and she carried on investigating. We altered course then to draw fire from her during that attack. And it was then, while we were carrying out this manoeuvre, that we hit the control tower of the Grass Bay, and some of her 4-inch guns were put out of action. And we could see fires burning on our upper deck. And in the meantime, the Exeter, the largest of the three British ships, had been hit again and again and had received further casualties. The next thing that happened, a smoke screen was laid across the Exeter to allow her to withdraw from the battle and to return to the Falkland Islands. Now, it's a long time ago, but I seem to recall that the period that the Exeter was in action lasted about 15 to 18 minutes and no longer, and she was gone, with dead all over the place and the bridge all smashed up. She was in a terrible state.
Could you see the Exeter clearly?
No, I was getting these instructions from the captain. In each turret, you have a captain of the turret, and our captain was relaying through his periscope what he was seeing, and he was telling us everything that was going on, whether we was hitting, whether we was missing, and what else was going on. He could see through his periscope all the time. His job was just to look through that periscope and find out exactly where the shells and that were going. And we started then a zigzag move, the Achilles and the Ajax. And it was during one of these zigzag moves that we were carrying out at increased speed, now that the Exeter had gone, because we were both much faster. One of the 16-inch shells hit the Ajax just above the waterline and came through the ship's side, exploding underneath X turret. Now, as they came into X turret and exploded, they killed all the crew in the handling room that was just below us. And at the same time, that put X turret out of action. Corporal Bashford, if you remember, who I spoke about earlier on, he was hit. And he just said to me, I'm hit, 3 times. And his stomach just lay at my feet. The temperature inside that turret now was extremely hot. There was smoke and steam, our bodies were covered in sweat. And Corporal Buckley, during this period, had the presence of mind to flood the cordite hoist to save the turret from blowing up.
To flood it with seawater?
To flood it with seawater, because if the cordite would have set alight, that would have blown the turret sky high.